The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to episode 102 of the world-famous Line of Vienna Suite podcast, the world's greatest Bolton Wanderers-based podcast. I'm Chris Manning, and tonight I'm joined by the one and only Will Jones. Good evening, Will. How are you doing, pal?
Good evening, Chris. Yeah, I'm well, thank you. Aside yesterday, but yeah, doing okay.
Brilliant. I thought about taking a cue from the announcer and announcing you as Eddie Skelly. And then you've been somebody else completely, but changed my mind at last minute. We're also joined tonight in an absolute blast from the past by the only Line of Vienna Suite contributor ever to get a parking ticket from Aldi when it comes to recording a podcast late at night. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back, Mr. Lee Tennant. Lee, good evening.
Evening, Chris. Thanks for that. Good memory there.
Three years ago. I've never forgotten about that. Never forgotten about the fact that the only place you could get Wi-Fi was nicking it from Aldi's car park. But, of course, you stayed too long on the car park back in the days of the hour and a half, 2 hour long plus podcasts. And there you go. Yeah, you got a fine, right. Got a fine off Aldi for dwelling well on their car park without buying anything from the shop, which is a disgrace. So you're very much welcome back, mate. It's been far too long.
Yep, cheers. Thanks, Chris.
Happy days. So, yeah, so, right. So, welcome to the cheerful world, ladies and gentlemen, of Bolton Wanderers. A funny week, I think we can probably all agree, in terms of the club's history. We've not had a great deal of progress on the old takeover, which we're all hoping for, but we've had an up-and-down week when it comes to on-the-pitch action. We'll start off with the midweek game. Bolton beat Birmingham. We won a game. Unbelievable.
Incredible.
I don't know about you lads, but I had a few text messages at full time, like how do you feel? How are you going to celebrate? And I had no idea. I'd completely forgot. Will, start with you first. Did you watch the game? How did you think the lads did?
Yeah, I was keeping up with it on Twitter and I just saw seeing what was going on. Obviously seeing the goal pop up. Obviously completely to my amazement. And I just couldn't believe that, you know, we'd actually hung on after that as well. You know, expecting Birmingham to turn it around within a couple of minutes, like, you know, Bristol City had been doing against us and so on. So, so I'd sort of just, after seeing the goal go in, I'd just sort of turned it off and just hoped for the best, expecting to see, you know, another update in the next few seconds saying, you know, they've equalised. But, you know, I'm incredibly impressed and, you know, credit to them where it's due. But, you know, obviously a little bit of a more different story yesterday and, you know, we'll get on to that later. But yeah, nonetheless, you know, definitely a valuable win on Tuesday.
Really was. Lee, to just to touch on you, I'm not sure if you watched the game or not, mate, but we won 1-0, so yeah, great stuff. I mean, any concerns that it was a midfielder scoring the goals and that our strikers still seem to get nowhere near scoring?
Yeah, for some reason, I was watching something on a video on Twitter, and the Birmingham fans were like, "Oh, would you have Donaldson back?" And they were like, "Yeah, we'd have him back." And I mean, obviously, that's a few years ago when he played for them before he joined Sheffield United. But I know he works hard and everything, but he's never going to score. He just feels like he's never going to score a goal. And it is a worry that Connolly got the goal and it wasn't a striker. But you know, and a win's a win. I was sat in watching the game on Tuesday. I was sat in the cinema, and then after the cinema, I went to the loo to look through the scores, and it was about the 91st minute. I couldn't believe we were winning 1-0. It ruined all my bets. I backed us to lose nearly every, which is another story. Which I shouldn't. People around me at the game can't believe I do that. But and then again, you know, it's a good way of making money this season. So
of course anyway, it is. I bet against Wanderers too. So you're not the only one, pal.
Yeah, so you know, scrolling through, I basically scrolled through the Twitter feed from minute zero and couldn't believe we went 1-0 down. And then when I saw we went 1-0 up, I didn't really care. It was Connolly and not McGuinness or Donaldson, to be honest. At the time, it was just nice to see us hold on to a win and give us a bit of a glimmer of hope, which got cruelly shattered on Saturday.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. When it comes to it, it doesn't really matter who scores the goal, does it? As long as we get the points. And I guess I kind of, looking a little bit forward to the Norwich game, I agree with Parky that if you'd offered us 3 points from those two games, performance aside, I think most of us probably would have agreed with him to say that's where we would have ended up being happy with. But of course, the manner of yesterday's game was far from anything but comfortable. So maybe if we move on to that ever so slightly in a minute or two, I want to just firstly talk about Thursday this past week, which was not only the day of my one-to-one meeting at work. Thank you, passed it, all good. Well, but it was also the 11-year anniversary of us turning over Atletico Madrid at home at the Reebok. Now, my particular memories of that night were, a younger version of me rocking up with the old fiver tickets that night to an absolute raucous Reebok, full of excitement for us finally playing a big team on our European run. Because granted, we played Sevilla, we played Rabotniki, Lee, your one for stats. Remind me, who was the third team in that group? Was it Braga? I think it was Braga.
I think the Sevilla one was under Big Sam, not under Megson. Because the one with Atletico, we beat. It was Red Star Belgrade, wasn't it? It was Krevesnev's Vedo, whatever they call them these
That's
days.
That's the one, yeah.
That was in the group. We were the first team to beat them. At home, I think we drew with, I think you're right, I think we drew with Braga at home. Or did we beat them? I don't remember. But then, obviously Atletico was that after? That was before Sport. Yeah, obviously.
That was the first knockout game. Yeah, that's right. I knew there was a reason why we invited you on. Good man. And, so, and of course, Wanderers rocked up against the team of Atletico Madrid superstars with Sergio Aguero in there. They also had Abiati in goal. All sorts of superstars playing. I mean, I wonder if Will, perhaps you might want to just touch on that first of all. Your memories of that night. I mean, obviously, you were probably what? How old were you then?
I was just going to say three
or something.
Just to make people feel very old. Yeah, I must have only been 7 at that point. I can vividly remember it to an extent. I think it was possibly the only time we've ever fully filled the Reebok. If I remember rightly, I think it was pretty much sold out somehow.
It was a full house.
It was absolutely rocking that night. Yeah, and obviously I remember Jeeves scoring the goal. But yeah, the things that stand out to me, like you said, with the star players, obviously they had Forlan, Aguero, and, Aguero getting sent off, of all things, and then for him to have never scored against us in the Premier League since, it's something, which I hold on to. But yeah, the Jeeves goal, I've never heard anything like it, in terms of, crowd roar after a celebration, and obviously at full time as well. I think we had those embarrassing clapper things or whatever they were in the stands, and as annoying as they were.
Well, they worked though, didn't they? You say embarrassing, but they absolutely worked. And since then, we've been relegated 2 times, so obviously there was some merit in having the plastic clappers on. Lee, what do you think about that particular night? I mean, we saw some very famous players come and go through the Reebok in those European runs, but to see Aguero lose his head against somebody as relatively inoffensive as Matt Taylor, just looking back, just seems crazy.
Yeah, well, I remember it. Well, it's ironic enough that in a game with LSG playing, that someone else gets sent off for spitting. But at the end of the day, like that game was, it really did stand out. First of all, two of my friends, one who's a Bury fan, one who's a Blackburn fan, couldn't wait to come with me and watch the game, which you'd have to pay. You couldn't even pay him 50 quid to come along there. You can't give away free tickets. But first of all, the atmosphere was amazing. We were playing a team. Atletico Madrid weren't by any means, obviously, with them being in the Europa League, obviously, they weren't by any means the heavyweights they are today. But they were still sort of a side that you'd look at, who'd be in the Europa League sort of season after season. They were sort of that second tier European heavyweights at the time. And we were by no means expected to roll them over, obviously. So, no. I mean, we had Andy O'Brien at the back. We had, We had Matty Taylor just signing. It was just after I think Matty Taylor had signed along with Caitlin Stein.
Only a couple of months previous.
It's when Megson got he got some actual money to spend and spent it pretty wisely, to be fair to him. And Taylor was amazing that game. I think he had something like 12 shots on goal in that game, and he was the best player on the pitch, Matty Taylor. And we had a pretty middling team, really. I'm pretty sure it was after an Elkalef, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
The season before.
He left that January transfer window, and this was the February after. Straight after. So it's only a couple of weeks after, yeah.
Yeah, I've got the lineups here, funnily enough.
Oh, perfect.
Go for it, mate, please.
Yossi, Hunt, Cahill, Andrew O'Brien,
Oh, yeah, Brian, I saw you explain.
J. Lloyd Samuel, rest in peace. Ivan Campo, Alex Chief, Daniel Guthrie. Selly Oscar on for him. Nolan, Taylor, and Kevin Davis. And then the bench was Al Habsi, Mate, Tay Morian, Vaz Tay, Joey O'Brien, and Sinclair.
Rob Sinclair.
Rob Sinclair,
Jordy.
Chiefs scored with...
Globetrotting Sinclair.
Chiefs scored with 15 minutes to go. And then, like you said, you know, they had Abiati in goal, Antonio Reyes, Aguero, Maxi Rodriguez, Diego Forlan. But 26,000 in attendance that night, so...
Brilliant. Yeah, I remember it very clearly with the £5 tickets. It made such a difference to the atmosphere. And then, obviously, I ended up going to Madrid for the second leg as well. So it's coming up to the anniversary of that as well. Just some stunning memories compared to the absolute horse shit that I'm about to bring up and talk to you boys. So, anyway, we've left it long enough. We've talked about absolutely everything else we possibly could. But Norwich at home, I mean, pretty much a shocking performance all around. Embarrassing, shameful, call it what you like. Wanderers were thoroughly outclassed to a degree that I've not seen since we played Wolves last season, where no other team, as I can recall, has just absolutely shredded us with the pace, with the skill of the passing, accuracy of movement, everything that they could possibly bring to the table, I thought Norwich did. And the fact it's Norwich is even more galling because I think they're more than the sum of the parts, because those players on their own are not world beaters. The players that haven't especially thrived elsewhere, they've got a few exciting youngsters, but people signed from the likes of Dortmund reserves, they've taken Pukki, who couldn't hit a barn door with Banjo in Scotland. All sorts of little combinations brought to pass with a decent manager with a bit of a vision and a commitment to a style of play. And Lee, I'll come to you first on your thoughts of the game. But other than the first sort of 6 or 7 minutes, I just thought we weren't in that one at all.
No, the movement and the quick thinking of the Norwich players just showed us up for what we are against anyone who's got a bit of an idea that we're slow and pretty much struggle to play any football at all. And Norwich just passed it around us with clever thinking, quick movement. And to be honest, the goals were fantastic. I watched them back this morning, actually, and there was quite a few where... few mainstream sources who'd sort of picked up on the fact they scored a couple of absolute brilliant team goals, and they were great goals. And, you know, maybe they'd have scored them against a better side than us, to be fair. I think maybe they had a very, very good day. Granted, Matthews saved us from getting an absolute record home defeat, a 7 or 8 nil or whatever it would have been. But at the end of the day, I think Norwich were, the game was put to bed within half. Was it 3-0 after half an hour?
I think 34 minutes, something like that.
I mean, once you 3-0 down after 35 minutes, it's just a case of damage limitation. I suppose we did that to an extent by not conceding another 3-4, which we easily could have done, through Matthews's, you know, decent performance in net. Although a lot of the saves he made, I felt that when a keeper comes up against a team like that, he gets probably too much praise than he deserves sometimes. He did make 2 or 3 good saves. The penalty save was a good save because it was a reasonable height for him. Matthews definitely came out of the game with credit. I wouldn't say it was a world-class performance. He still let 4 in.
I don't think anyone's going to go mad about it, but I think there must be a recognition, I think, at times.
Yeah, there is.
When your defence and your midfield in front of you are as pathetic as ours was on Saturday.
Yeah.
The keeper can only do so much.
Yeah, but like you touched on, Chris, some of these players that Norwich have brought in, I was just doing a bit of research before the pod because I'm very professional, you know, after 3 years out or whatever. I'm coming back.
Yeah, I'm sat in my dressing gown, mate, picking my toenails. There's no research going on here. Don't
bother. Yeah, well, anyway, so, yeah, like you say, Norwich have brought in, they brought in Vrančić, I think, from Darmstadt in the second division in Germany. And the problem in this day and age is that you don't get to see how much transfer fees actually are. It's always undisclosed. And I was looking at, obviously, I knew Pukki had come, and I was pretty sure he was on a free, and he was free, completely free. Not saying his wages won't be decent. He's played for Schalke, Celtic, Bromby. He'll be on a decent whack, probably more than we could afford, granted.
Did he sign him from Celtic, or had he been elsewhere?
No. He was at Schalke, he went over to Celtic, and then Celtic, he flopped at Celtic, went to Bromby. Yeah. Didn't do that well at first at Bromby, then had a couple of bumper seasons at Bromby. But then he couldn't agree a new contract and he moved to Norwich from Bromby. So Norwich got a striker who was scoring goals, but only in the Danish league. You know, he wasn't there wasn't a big clamour. There was no Premier League teams coming in for him. It wasn't
it's a league we used to plunder quite regularly. That,
yeah, that kind it is, of yeah.
It, didn't we?
Franson, Johansson, Jensen, everyone else. Yeah, so let you look at a few other players like Vrančić and Stieperman, who scored the second goal. He's been in and out, but someone like Onel Hernandez, the other guy, Cuban-born German, they're all from the German second division, which obviously Daniel Fart, their manager, must know well from his time as Dortmund second division manager. I'll tell you what, though, whoever's the next Dortmund second team manager, so there's been Wagner, there's been Fark, the new Huddersfield manager was the Dortmund second team, the reserve team manager. Why don't we just bring whoever it is, just bring him in? It seems to work, doesn't it?
It's interesting to see that a club like Dortmund that's got that sort of attacking philosophy can provide that through their coaches, who can then sort of transpose that into the other different teams that they manage. And it's very interesting to see that there's obviously such a merry-go-round of established names in the English league, whereas the clubs that have taken a bit of a risk, like Huddersfield and Norwich, and obviously Huddersfield League twice with that division, you can reap the rewards if your manager takes a slightly different approach to things. But the only one that I'd really, really heard of, in fact, you and I had this conversation at half-time, Lee, Buendia is the only one that I'd really heard that much about.
Yeah,
I was asking you, who the hell's this right back and who the hell's this guy, and then blah, 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 because the players had come out of nowhere and they were seriously impressive. And I appreciate that Farker had perhaps had a bit of an underwhelming first season, but again, just goes to show that a manager with a vision, with time and with a bit of investment can make a big difference in the Championship.
Yeah, it's a blending. Obviously, they've got three or four quite, you know, promising youth. Max Aaron's obviously linked with Spurs, and they've got Ben Godfrey, centre-half. They've got Todd Cantwell further forward. He didn't play against us, but he's broken through this season. They've got like three or four really promising youngsters, and they've got obviously, you know, this mix of sort of young and hungry players who've come from like the German, mainly German second division or Spanish second division. So they've got like they've blended that sort of, and it hasn't cost them millions. It's probably cost them a few million, but I think if we had say 5 million and someone with a vision, that is what you can do. You don't need to spend your 15 million on your Sambalongas and your 11 million on your Braithwaites like Middlesbrough did. You can progress in this league but you do need some money. You can't just be picking up free transfers.
Sorry,
I was going to say, like, you just need literally a few million, but they have. I'm not saying Norwich haven't paid transfer fees for players. They have, but they've picked up players for relative peanuts compared to what some of the teams in this division are paying for players. And it is possible, if we were just able to get investors just to give us a little bit of money and a little bit of hope, it is possible to make a silk ear out of a silk purse out of a sow's ear or whatever the old thing.
Very good. Yeah, no, you're dead right. And to notice even the fact that on their bench is a striker in Jordan Rhodes that we would probably all give our left arm for. And I don't know what fee they paid for him, but I expect it's probably more than we paid for our entire first team. But there's something to be said for a manager looking beyond his comfort zone and to take things on a bit more of an adventurous level. And obviously we've seen that from Farker. And for me, Will, come on to you next on this one. Some of the best football we've seen at the Reebok, home or away, in a good since Wolves last season for me.
At least, yeah. In every aspect of the game, you know, they were beating. They were the better side. You know, they were beating us to every ball. They were a lot quicker. I mean, you know, there's always a pattern. I think with the way you know that teams pick us apart, and it's always the fact that it's a bit of pace going forward. Because I think for years on years, you know, even from the Premier League days, you know, we've lacked pace at fullback. And it's just something that, you know, away teams seem to, you know, they love to come and exploit, you know, when they come to the Reebok. And, you know, it just seems to be like every single week, you know, the right and left backs just get absolutely destroyed. And, you know, this week was no different. And, you know, although you can blame the fullbacks, like I just said, I think Noon was the last man back for the first goal. And I mean, you know, I expected nothing more than for Pukki to turn him inside out and then smash it past Matthew.
Same.
You know, but, you know, it's like, well, where was the defence then? You know, it's, although you can't really blame him.
It's a difficult one.
Yeah, it is difficult because you just...
It is difficult. I totally agree with you because, whilst I would probably expected more from a defender in terms of the behaviour that Noon exhibited with being, you know, being turned fairly quickly. And I thought throughout the game, our challenges were very, very ponderous and very, very predictable. You know, and if you look at things in the grand scheme of the entire universe, there's no way on earth that Craig fucking Noon should be your last man against the Championship's top goal scorer in any circumstance whatsoever.
I mean, take nothing away from Matthews as well. You know, like you were just saying, he's had a great game, you know, and you know, I thought he was great to come off his line, you know, and have a bit of a go to prevent, you know, three balls and whatever, because they seem to be playing a lot of them, you know, both on the ground and over the top. So, you know, to have someone who's not absolutely rooted to the line, like Anik can sometimes be, you know, is definitely a positive. And, you know, like you said, all right, he's letting four goals, but it could have been, you know, 7, 8, maybe 9, you know, without him. So,
definitely,
you know, he's made a good penalty save. And, you know, all credit to him. But I think the rest, you know, have definitely underperformed. And it's, you know, we deserve nothing more than that, really. So
I agree. He was certainly let down by his teammates. I mean, we'll just quickly go through the starting lineup. I know there's a couple of different places have published their player ratings from today, all of which you could probably cut in half and still end up being very, very generous. The defence in terms of the back, we'll call it the back three for now. So, Lee, come to you first on that. Obviously, we're playing Olkowski. We're playing, Lowe, Wieter, Beavers and Noon as a strange kind of back five. How do you think that they did individually and as a collective? Feel free to disagree with me if I feel like I've described them as a back five when they were far from it.
It's either or, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
I think you can just cover those five players with four words, really, can't you? Bring him in Essenstein with T, but realistically, I don't know. I think I felt a bit sorry for him in a way that the players they were up against were just, the athleticism of the players they were up against were just so superior that they just didn't really stand a chance. As long as teams come to play two players and they play on the ground with pace, then Wieter and Beavers have got no chance. They're like the submarines, aren't they, turning? So Wieter and Beavers, I'll give them a four, and a generous four, both of them. Mm. Obviously, we all know Beavers' distribution issues, and you know he's not there primarily to be a playmaker, but equally you'd expect him to have an ounce of football and ability to play a pass into midfield. But then again, do any of our midfielders properly show for the ball? Probably not.
Well, so, quite right.
Beavers and Wieter, I give them a four. And Olkowski, he seemed to start the game okay, but then obviously he sort of got ripped apart a little bit down his side a few times by Jamal Lewis. And I can't remember exactly who sort of played on that left. Was it Buendia who sort of cut in from the left?
Buendia, I think. McLean sort of played the left-hand side of the field. So, Between the two of them, I think they had his number.
Yeah, I think you could probably cover the back. I think you can probably give Noon an extra mark because he does put a shift in. It's the least you expect. I don't really like saying put a shift in because everyone should put a shift in, but he doesn't let his head go down, Noon, to be fair to him. And I'd probably give Noon a five and the rest of them a four. Yeah, and Lowe's not a defender. He's stuck in there. So he sort of played slightly in front of Wieter and Beavers to an extent. But, you know, Lowe's not a defender. And, you know, he tried his best. Again, I don't think there's any lack of effort. It's just a lack of quality. And I think,
I
cover Lowe with a four, I think, as well.
I agree. He's not a defender. I'm not quite sure he's a midfielder either. Will, I'm gonna just touch on on the centre halves, first of all, because Lee's obviously made a point there about their ponderous nature. I mean, it, you know, you get what you pay for in this league, I suppose, and we're stuck with players who were with us in the deepest, darkest depths of League One. So perhaps we're being a little bit unfair as to point out just how much they struggle in the Championship. But Christ, Wieter and Beavers are a very, very funny pair. I mean, they seem to be, for a decent whack of the Wanderers fan base, they seem to be completely immune from criticism. I mean, for me, I don't think I'm going to surprise anyone when I say that as much as I like Wieter as a guy, he's been with us now for, 8 or 9 years? And we've been on a pretty much a constant downward trend throughout that 8 or 9 years. And he seems to escape major criticism from the majority of the fan base because he's obviously such a decent guy. And Christ, he likes a drink, he sings a bit of Neil Diamond. Yeah, let's forget about the fact that he's played a major part in our downfall for the best part of a decade. But between the two of them, there is zero pace. There's no kind of even opportunity to give any sort of real distribution going on. Mm. And the minute they approach anybody with any sort of semblance of pace, they crumble quicker than God knows what else they could crumble as.
Yeah, completely.
What did you think about our options in terms of centre-half? Because they're few and far between, aren't they? Park is not blessed with choices.
I mean, when you say, you know, let's evaluate the options, I mean, you know, you'd rather not when you're looking at, you know, Wilson and you know, Hobbs. I mean, credit to Hobbs, you know, he's done all right. He's bagged a goal here and there. And, you know, but, you know, I think even last week, you know, he was at fault for a couple of goals. You know, and like you said, I mean, you can't lump criticism completely on what he said, you know, but it's understandable that, you know, he's definitely lacking in pace and, you know, to push himself in terms of, you know, playing every game this season, you know, was perhaps too much of an ask for him. But, you know, he's done well to keep himself fit. But like you said, you know, I think Beavs' distribution issues is an understatement. You know, it just literally lumps it in any direction. And, you know, I think that's sort of the backbone of the downfall, because, you know, I think there's a point or a couple of points at least on Saturday when, you know, they put the ball through and, you know, both of them had their hands up, you know, for offside rather than chasing after it. You know, and it's just it's come to a point where,
very poor.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, to an extent, they're immune to criticism, because I think it's just everyone's just grown to know what to expect with them, you know, and it's just like, oh, well, they're lacking for pace, that's it, that's the reason they've conceded. But it's like, well, if that's the case, we need some pace, don't we? But, you know, we had the likes of Burke, who had a bit of pace, you know, the other season, you know, and he wasn't much better, so, you know, it's still a bit complicated to know what the root of the issues are.
True. I mean, very, Leeds, very true.
Leeds said, you know, in the midfield, you know, does anyone even show for it? Again, there was a point where it had been played out from the back. And they were literally waiting for the ball to come to them. It's like schoolboy errors, you know, and then someone just nips in and takes it off them, and you know, they're on the counter, and that's it.
Well, that's it.
You know, and I've been, you know, particularly vocal in terms of criticising Olkowski, because I just think, positionally wise, he's just absolutely clueless. You know, his work rate isn't good enough, and, you know, when you're relying so heavily on the fullbacks to stop the pace from the wings, you know, when they're non-existent, you know, when they're busy pushing forward, and I know that's a risky take with the back three, but, you know, even so, you know, you've got to expect them as, you know, proper fullbacks, you know, to be there, and, you know, credit to Noon, because he's filled in and done a better job over the other side, and, you know, I think he was probably the best of a bad bunch on Saturday, but, you know, the rest of them, you know, are completely, you know, liable to the defeat, really. It's just difficult to know who it is, you know, I don't think you can pinpoint it necessarily, but,
No, I think you're right. I think the team is the sum of the parts, isn't it? And it's a bunch of waifs and strays chucked together from other clubs where they're not quite first choice or they're not quite wanted. I mean, Norwich is a perfect example where their third choice goalkeeper is now our first choice. Yep. And that's the world that we live in. But we'll move on to the midfield then in that case. We'll bunch them all together in terms of Noon, Vela, Murphy and Connolly. I thought Murphy was perhaps the best of a bad bunch in terms of the way that he at least tried to get the ball down and play. Granted, he's not particularly tenacious. He's not particularly doesn't particularly get up so much going forward. But I feel like he's probably the only one out of that midfield, and maybe even, you know, bar the inclusion of perhaps Connell in terms of midfield, has been the only one that can put his foot on the ball and pick a pass out. I was not surprised in the slightest to see Vela taken off at half time. I'm curious to come to you, Lee, first of all, to see whether you think that Josh Vela's regression as a footballer, whether you believe that's down to Parkey, the way that he manages him, whether it's down to the formation, the tactics, or what. And then we'll come on to you in a second about the rest of the midfield. But Lee, talk to me about Vela, first of all. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious to most fans, or at least it is from my point of view, that this guy is coming to the end of his time at Bolton. There's no talk of a new contract. He perhaps doesn't deserve one. But in light of Saturday, what do you think the future holds for him?
Future, unfortunately, for someone who I've obviously always had high hopes for, being as old as I am, I remember him breaking through as a 16-year-old, scoring, you know, being a, you know, fast tracked into that sort of the under 23 or whatever it was termed at the team at the time, and scoring and thinking, wow, we've got a player on our hands here. He's linked with all big clubs. Liverpool apparently had £1 million bid turned down for him, and you know, he's someone we all hope would be the sort of guy to bring us back to the, you know, sort of spearhead us back to the promised land of the Premier League, I suppose. But, you know, while in League One, perhaps he found his level. His figures were good in League One. He drove forward from midfield very well. He's just not found, I think, like you touched on in previous pods, which I've listened to, he's sort of been pushed sort of deeper into midfield. He's never really gone back to right back like he started and broke through in under Lennon. But he's been pushed a bit deeper, and his goal scoring ability to pop up with a goal has sort of been nullified because he's playing a bit deeper. And he's also, when he does play in that role behind a McGuinness or a Donaldson, you know, like he did on the first day when away at West Brom, apparently Parkinson kept saying how he was our best player in that game, but he's rarely played in there since. So it's a strange one with Valier. It's a shame that someone who's broke through the youth and it has stuck with us when he's perhaps had chances to go elsewhere. We don't know whether that's, you know, definite or not, but perhaps he's had chances to move on and he's stuck with the club and he has done us a good service over the years, but he's just someone who's not, he's stagnated, as you've said, and he's someone who's not really, I feel like he's sometimes trying too hard. Some people may disagree and say he doesn't work hard enough, but I think he's always run, he kind of runs in a bit of a headless chicken way, which is someone who's trying too hard and not really engaging his brain on when he's playing football. I feel like he really is trying hard to either stay in the team or, you know, help the club out, because he clearly does love the club. At the end of the day, he's a League One player. I think he always will be, along with, you know, unfortunately Zach Clough. I think they found the level in League One, both of them, and it's a shame, but I think that is the level and that's just the way it goes sometimes. I don't think he's going to improve anymore. What is he, 24? Probably 25, 24 now, maybe 23, 24, yeah. However old he is.
He's been around longer than you think, hasn't he? I mean, he's 25 now, time. His birthday's just before Christmas. I mean,
he's 25,
yeah. Yeah, he's probably not in being around the first team for 6 or 7 years now. I bet he's not made 150 appearances, perhaps maybe a bit more.
It
just feels like an unfulfilled potential today. Obviously, he's had an healthy career as a professional footballer. In that front, he's streets ahead of all us idiots here. But Will, what do you think? It just feels like a case of what might have been rather than a case of what was.
Yeah, definitely. I think, like Lee said, you know, he found his level in League One, and I'm not going to lie, on Saturday, you know, I was genuinely fishing around for who had actually been subbed off. You know, I've sat there for at least 10, 15 minutes trying to figure out who'd actually gone off other than Donaldson. Which just sort of tells you, you know, how much an effect he had on the game. And, you know, to be fair to him, you know, he's not had the game time recently. And I know that's due to personal things. But, you know, other than that, you know, he's not exactly, you know, proving to us that, you know, he should stay on beyond the end of the season. And, you know, that he's still got the quality that, you know, that he produced, you know, a couple of seasons ago. And, you know, although he was sort of dubbed as the next best thing, you know, particularly in that number 10 role, you know, he's not really had the opportunity to prove that continuously. And I think, you know, a lot of Bolton fans have been crying out for, you know, just keep the same team. And, you know, I think Saturday, in all fairness, or despite the drubbing, was as close as we got to, you know, keeping the same team. I think it was the one that finished at Birmingham, you know, and it's like, well, let's just keep that, even though it might be a losing team. You know, at the end of the day, it wasn't on Tuesday, you know, and Norwich were just a very good side. But, you know, it's the same case with us too. And, you know, he hasn't played at all. But it's like, but if you gave him a run in the team, you know, when he started to get a few goals here and there and he started getting assists and putting a few pieces of play together, then he might have actually proved to us that he's worth keeping on. As you said, the absence of Connolly, we're struggling with someone to knock the ball around properly. I mean, I was going to say O'Neill, although he's sort of been at the root of some of the criticism recently, I think he's very good at spraying the ball around, particularly next to Murphy or instead of Murphy. Because although, you know, a lot of criticism also gets lumped on Lowe, I think he is underrated as well. You're saying, particularly when he's in that midfield role as opposed to a fullback or a centre half, he does do his bit, and have, you know, Lowe and O'Neill next to him with potentially Connell as a 10 or Vela as a 10, potentially the way forward. But again, you know, it's difficult to tell what actually needs changing. I can understand that the difficult job that Parky has in trying to interpret that for himself, you know, as to what needs to change, because he gets criticism. He's damned if he does, damned if he doesn't, because in effect nobody actually knows the answer. Although it could be as simple as saying, well, we should have signed a striker in January who can bag 10 a season. It's like, yeah, well, that's all well and good, but if you're conceding more than you're scoring, then that's pretty pointless. So it's a difficult
one. I think that's all very, very fair points to make. I mean, it's one of those very, very rare games where it was over as a contest after 30-odd minutes, and the people next to me, in fact, they'd come over from Yorkshire, they made no bones about it. When the half-time whistle blew, they were going home, you know. They weren't pissing about watching another shit show. I mean, Lee, you and I spoke about betting at half-time. The only thing we first talked about was, you know, how many do you think Norwich are going to get? And obviously, they declared on 4. But bar Matthews' performance, it could have been a damn sight worse.
Yeah, unfortunately for me, yeah, back minus 4, Norwich on the handicap, never mind. So, yeah, but at the end of the day, I mean, Norwich were just so far superior than ourselves, and it just got a bit embarrassing. It was a case of how many they're going to score at the end of the day, wasn't it? But
yeah,
it says definitely. It all when someone's come over, driven all the way from, well, say all the way from Yorkshire, it's only an hour, but, you know, that depends on where they are in Yorkshire, but to drive over here from anywhere and leave after at half time is I've never done it myself, which is probably indicative of that very little better to do with my afternoon than watch us get hammered. But at least I was watching a good football inside. And at the end of the day, I was just thinking then when Will was talking about our midfield options, I was just thinking, why don't we just give three a go when Connell's back fit? Give Connell. He seems to like Connell a bit deeper. He seems to start off a bit deeper. Because Preston's the only game I've seen him play, because I didn't go to the first home game he played in. I can't remember who it was now, but I wasn't able to go to that. If you have Connell, I think Connell, O'Neill, and Murphy is the three. At least when they're on the ball, they're going to try and play it forward, in my opinion. O'Neill's actually done well.
Yeah.
And another thing I was going to say, sorry. I was going to say, I remember reading Parkinson's article, Bolton Evening News, Mark Isle's article, after the Preston game, and he said how Connolly had struggled a little bit in midfield, but when he moved to left back, I think this is Parkinson's own words, I might be wrong. He said, but when he moved to left back, he had a really good end to the game. And then the next game, although granted we won, so I can't really be too critical of Parkinson's team selection, he keeps him in midfield. That's the kind of strange he can be damned if he does, damned if he doesn't sometimes, Parkinson, with the way things are. But I just think sometimes he doesn't help himself, does he? No. And I'm just thinking Connolly, just stick Connolly at left back. Just stick him there at left back. Yeah. He's more mobile than Taylor's too old. Taylor's League One, if not League Two these days. And just grounds, forget it. Don't even get him near the team. Sorry. He's proved he can't. He's not up to it. He's really has proved that he's not up to it. Match practice or not, he's not up to it. Stick Connolly at left back, and let's go with three players in midfield who want to get on the ball and play it forward, and we might see some different results. But anyway, I'm not the manager. I'm a laptop manager. I'm not a football team, a real life manager, am I? So, at the end of the day,
I think you raised a good point there. Like, I think that three is definitely the best option. And even if Connolly plays at left back, because the other options aren't particularly strong either, I think that's potentially the way forward, because they definitely are most creative three. I think then you have to evaluate the right back position. But other than that, if you're talking in terms of trying to fit people in, you put Connolly at left back, perhaps Lowe at right back, and then those three, like we said, in midfield, and then just see whether it works best with two up front, one up front, or whatever it may be, depending on if you're playing wide men. At least give those three a run in midfield. I mean, that's just what I was going to interrupt with then, actually. Do we know how long Connell's out for?
He'll be back by the Millwall game, probably on the 9th.
And I know O'Neill was out. I'm not sure if he was on the bench on Saturday or not, but, if we can get all three of them playing at the same time, because I think Murphy sort of, he played the first couple of games, everyone thought he's just another, and then he just disappeared off the face of the earth. And then since he's come back, and all of a sudden he's he's actually doing a bit.
But that's typical of Parkinson, isn't it? The fact he can sort of ostracise a player for no particular reason. And then out of nowhere, the player comes back and be seemingly first pick every week. I was just going to say exactly the same thing. Little was chucked to one side for the sake of John Flanagan last season, and he's barely played since in the best part of probably about 10 months. I bet he's not played three games.
I can only think him and Parky falling out at some point. To use Lowe at right back, I think Lowe possibly played there a little bit in his Blackburn days. Maybe early doors he played a bit at right back, but he isn't a right back. Apparently,
no.
I think the games that he played right back, I was in New Zealand for, over the Christmas period, he sort of slotted in at right back a little bit. And my mate said, yeah, he's doing all right there. He's actually looks more comfortable there, and he does in midfield in a way, which, I'm not saying changing a player's position sometimes can be a masterstroke, but it does seem bizarre to have we had the second coming and, the second messiah in Olkowski at the start of the season, who's quickly gone wayward. We've ground out any enthusiasm and any decent performances out of him already. And then, to have someone like Little sitting on the bench, and then he's sticking Jason Lowe in at right back.
It sends a wrong message to those players that he's trying to work. It sends completely the wrong message for me to the players trying to work their way back into the team. It doesn't really matter what effort you make to get back in the team. As long as he's his favourites play, he'll always find a place for them, whether they deserve it or not. And I think that's what's so concerning to see. I mean, we'll come on to other team selection issues ever so shortly. But to see the fact that we won't even deviate, you know, we might well change the formation for a bit, but ultimately it's the same people sitting in the same places. And to see Will Buckley come on for Craig Noon is probably the most Parkinson moment of his entire 3 years in charge.
In the 90th minute.
What an important substitution. Yeah, by which time I'm bombing it down the motorway back home. I'm not sitting to watch that dickhead playing any more times for me. So let's just backtrack ever so slightly. I mean, Lee, you and I were sat there just chatting and didn't quite pick up on this at first. And the announcer made an absolute glorious Rick.
That was incredible.
Yeah, let's welcome next time. Maybe we should just welcome our former legend, Kevin, and then you're not going to offend anybody. I saw the tweet that Lanny Vinner put out, and that's when I clicked on what had happened. So Nolan came out. Nolan hadn't, to my knowledge, been advertised in advance as being the guest for the halftime draw. Glorious announcer decided to let everyone know that Super Kevin Davies had come back. And obviously, being a fan of the latter rather than particularly the former, I was delighted to see Kevin Davies come back, except the fact that he'd changed into a younger Scouse model of himself. but we'll dwell on this ever so slightly because it's not really a great deal to talk about other than a curiosity. But did you clock it straight away? They'd made that mistake.
Yeah, I mean, I don't usually hang around in the stands at half time. You know, I usually just go in for a cuppa or whatever. But yeah, it was just that
one time. You're in the posh boxes, aren't you? You go inside for a nice warm brew and a sit on a comfy padded chair.
but it was the one time where I'd literally just sat there and just egged out. I was just talking to a mate, and then all of a sudden, like, I could see Nolan just like in front of me because he's obviously waiting not far from where I was sitting. I could see him having photos and everything, and then when I heard the announcement coming, I was just and then when he started with Super, I was just like, hang on a minute, and then he went Davies, and I was just waiting for him to correct it, and he didn't, and then it literally took him until about halfway up to the halfway line for him to actually realise what he'd said, and then obviously like there's the picture of Nolan, you know, in the paper or whatever, you know, covering his face or whatever. And it's just the summary of sort of what's going on at the club at the minute, isn't it?
It's nothing more than
a slip of the tongue, you know, and I'm not going to say, you know, it's anything like that. It's just, and it's weird, you know, for once, you know, you could actually hear, like, laughter going around the ground, you know, it's not something you often hear. But I think everyone just sort of realised and just went, hang on a minute, what?
Are you sure? It's just silly. There was plenty of laughter going around the East Stand during the first half, mate, I can assure you of that. I think, Just to dwell on the first half for a couple of minutes longer, I think it's funny to notice how things have changed, because in the past we've always had outright mutiny against certain managers in the past when results haven't gone our way. This, Lee, to come to you on this one, this just all seems like an incredibly passive, all right then, we're shit, we know we are, we're not going to do anything about it, so why bother wasting my voice? But did you expect more anything anti-Parky to sort of go on at weekend, or... As far as I can recall, there were no chants against Ken, for example, either. It all just seems to be petering out in a massive, apathetic fog of who gives a toss.
Yeah, that's pretty well summed up, to be honest. I can't really disagree with any of that. It's I've never been one to boo and go mad. I don't know, once in a while I have, but, you know, it's difficult, really, to...
Only when you've had a pint, and can I just educate the listeners on one thing. Lee says he's never done that. I have a video on my WhatsApp of Lee doing exactly that, probably about 12:30 at night at the Reebok when it's an abandoned train station. So don't come across all innocent, young man, because we know full well you've got it inside you to do that.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Just nothing's going to change, is it? Like, we can't afford to sack.
Oh, exactly.
Well,
having
said that, Parkinson's contract only runs to the end of the season, doesn't it? So I'm pretty sure we can't, because we gave him a new contract to the end of next season, last season. So how much can it cost to sack him? Like,
about 20 grand,
as much as the police bill for that process.
We were at fault for that as well, remember?
Yeah, exactly. If you hadn't have done that protest, we might have got rid of Parky. So it would have
God
yeah.
save
I think the fact he's not been sacked. The fact he's not been sacked points to me to say that that's probably a job for the new person coming in who takes over from Ken. So obviously he's not going to spend his own money sacking Parky when he can leave it a few weeks and see what's what.
Yeah, you're right about the apathy. It's just people were sort of leaving to go at half time. Whether they were, I think after the third goal, a few people near me left, and whether they were going for a pint and a pie, I don't know. Whether they, like you say, hot footed it down the 61, I'm not sure. But I think people are just frustrated at the situation. There's not really, apart from Ken, there's not even that much against Ken. That one game for sort of 10 minutes throwing some tennis balls on the pitch, and then it's back to like, well, nothing. I don't know.
Mm.
I mean, I didn't get involved with the protest. I was having a nice goat cheese pizza in the Italian across the road. I'm too old for protesting, me. I leave it to the kids. But at the end of the day, I think, yeah, there's a lot of apathy. It's a shame, really, because, you know, it's a proud football club and we all love supporting it, and we deserve better, and the whole town deserves better, and Parkinson deserves better than the crap he's had to put up with, and the lack of money he's had to spend. And you know, we're going to touch on an article that he wrote himself, you know, that we've discussed pre-pod, that, you know, it's hard not to like the guy and think, you know, in another world, how could he do with a bit of money? Even the amount of money that Norwich have had, you know, how would he do? You know, we'll maybe never know, and maybe Phil will never get that chance to have a club with a bit of money. And you sort of feel sorry for Parkin. It's to the point where you feel bad being angry at him, because he's a bit limited manager with no money, and it's a little bit, you kind of, as a human being, you sort of, I would feel quite sort of quite bad being so angry at him. It's Anderson you've got to be angry at, I suppose, for taking on a club when he's not got any money to run it, but he's seen a way of making some money, so how can you be angry at him for that? I don't know.
It's a pair of lame ducks, isn't it? Will, where do you stand on this?
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one. I mean, you know, we've been talking about it for weeks about, you know, where we stand with Parky, and, you know, obviously I keep referencing back to your article about the polite mutiny thing, and I just think that summed it up the best, really. Another bit of a plug, but it's just interesting to see, you know, like you said, his contract's out at the end of the season, how much, you know, the fees behind sacking him. You know, I know our Liam loves to remind us, you know, on the weekly that, you know, sacking costs money, but, you know, coming to the end of his contract, it must just be like any other player, you know, in terms of, you know, the payoff fee. I think we've got a Twitter question saying something similar about whether he's waiting around or something like that, and that completely rules that out based on the fact that he'll have to walk, you know, that's his time up, you know, if nothing changes before the end of the season. So, you know, whether it's worth forking out that extra bit just for him to leave for nothing, you know, at the end of summer, or, you know, whether or not he's waiting for somebody else to do that favour for him.
Mm-hmm.
It's something, I mean, I'd seen something in the stand, which, you know, I can't be exact, and, you know, don't quote me on this exactly, you know, but I think it was about 10 minutes to go or something like that, and I was just getting ready to go and end up sitting, you know, staying just to see what happened. Because I think a fan, like, not far from behind me, who might have been in the West Upper, had shouted something quite derogatory at Parky, to the point where he'd forced him to turn round, you know, and say something back to him, or just shout, you know, as if, like, wondering who it was. And this guy continued to shout, you know, whatever it was, you know, it was quite muffled, but then, you know, it turned to the stewards, you know, by the tunnel or whatever, and as if to say, you know, I want him out or whatever, you know, or just say, go and have a word with him, you know, and then it seemed to be all the operations going, you know, the people running left, right and centre, and I was just, you know, I was just intrigued as to, what you know, what he'd said in terms of whether it was a threat, whether it was, you know, just something based on, you know, he'd had enough of it, or, you know, whatever. And Parky's not particularly one to lose his head, I haven't seen, you know, as far as he's been in charge with us, and, you know, although he can be quite vocal at times, you know, particularly in his post-match interviews, you know, to see him have a direct sort of thing with a fan, that having consequences to it, you know, it is something which, you know, it not concerning necessarily, but just intriguing as to why that was, or, you know, what the motif was behind it. But, yeah.
No, I mean, that's curious, because it has certainly been there certainly has been, at least, you know, by the odd shout here and there, a general reluctance, I think, to make things explicit in terms of people wanting to express their displeasure towards a manager. I think it's a general feeling across the board that most people do believe his time at the club should come to an end. But I guess the uncertainty off the pitch only sort of mirrors the uncertainty on the pitch, because with no clear leadership, it seems, away from the field, with the chairman obviously hopefully working hard to get the club sold. So therefore, his focus perhaps shouldn't be on the team, and so perhaps it's no surprise that things haven't been sorted out in terms of the manager's role. But we'll see. We saw when Holdruff and latterly Anderson took on the job back at the start, that's when Lennon lost his job, if you recall. So maybe that'll come sooner rather than later. Now, one thing that did sort of cheese me off a little bit was, yeah, the game was lost, you know, 3-4-0, whatever you want to call it, after an hour. Parkinson chose at half time to make his changes. He took Donaldson and Vela off. Personally, I would have liked to have seen Hall and Pritchard given more of a game, because we've seen them have a few minutes here and there, but nothing substantial. But Lee, to come back to you on that, do you think that Parkinson missed a trick? I mean, bar the absolute stupidity of Buckley for Noon, the pointlessness, the futility of it, Pritchard and Hall should have been given at least half an hour, 45 minutes.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's a free hit, isn't it? When you're 3-0 down at home, at least these two coming on would have given us a bit of a reason to stir a little bit of interest in the second half. When you know, 3-0 down against a team like Norwich, there's no coming back from that. When we can't even score, you know, we very rarely score two in a game, never mind three. So once we're 3-0 down, it's a free hit. We're not going to get, the crowd aren't going to get on Hall's back. They're going to give Hall and Pritchard plenty of encouragement if they come on. And it's a perfect scenario to throw them in, really, because there's no pressure. There's not going to be anything. If they both have an absolute shocker, it's never going to be mentioned again. It's not going to be detrimental to the development. To not throw those players on at half-time, they should have both come on, is just madness. That was the one thing that actually annoyed me the most about the game on Saturday, that they didn't come on. Retrospectively, I didn't really think about it too much at the time. And then I thought, wait a minute, isn't Hall on the bench today? Because he's not really been on the bench every week. He's not been there every game. And I thought, he's on the bench today. Why in God's earth does he not just come on? And, you know, you never know. Second half, Norwich, they did at times let us go forward. Towards the end of the game when they were 4-0 up and they missed that penalty, and then the last sort of 10, 15 minutes, we had a little spell of attacking. Imagine if Hall was on the pitch there and Pritchard, and one of them got a goal, or Pritchard set up a goal, what that would do for the confidence, you know what I mean? And Norwich were sort of, they were sort of coasting at that point by about the 80, between 80 and 90 minutes. They were sort of, even I think they were bored, they were just that bored with how easy it was. They sort of let us have a little go at it, you know, they sort of, go on then, you have a little attack at us. Why don't you try and get a goal if you can, even though we couldn't, it was just so shit. But basically, you know, it was farcical that neither of them even got a minute on the pitch. That's the one thing that really pissed me off in the second half, to be honest, that when you've got a chance there to throw two lads in who deserve a shot, and even Parky said that he's been impressed with Pritchard when he's played, and then he doesn't even give him a minute when the game's over. It says it all, really, doesn't it?
It certainly does to me. Will, where do you stand on that?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely would have brought Hall on at least, you know, early second half, if not half-time, you know, because, like I said, bringing Donaldson off at that point, you know, it's like, well, may as well do a like-for-like. Although, you know, all right, the subs made somewhat of a difference, bar Buckley, perhaps would have been worth giving the youth some game time at least, you know, if nothing else, because, all right, the game's not going to change, you know, nobody's going to turn the game on its head at that point, but, you know, there's a chance of Connor Hall banging a goal than pretty much anybody else on that pitch at that moment in time. You know, and to have Pritchard in the middle as well, you know, might have actually, you know, he's another one who offers for the ball, you know, he's eager to go forward, you know, lots of energy. Particularly, you know, whilst everyone's tiring and Norwich are sort of just, you know, sitting back, you know, they've got what they want now, you know, just to give him a bit of a free room, you know, would do him confident, you know, would do his self-confidence, you know, every good. So, you know, I think it's a bit of a wasted opportunity where that's concerned. So,
definitely.
You think when they start the game, you know, it's a bit more of a risk because it's on them from minute one, and if we lose possession in the midfield, you know, or if the midfield's fault, you know, for everything that's sort of going wrong, then they're under criticism. But, you know, when the game's already lost, a perfect opportunity for them to shine, you know, you've got a question, you know, why aren't they being given that opportunity?
Of course. And it's not even a question of expecting someone like Hall to come on and bang a goal in or score a goal, you know, whatever you think he might be responsible for. I think it's more of a question of expecting the lads to come in and just to try something different, because surely we've seen enough over the past few weeks, the fact that the same old, and I hate to call back to it again because I feel like I've called back to it 100 times already, but Buckley on for Noon. I mean, what the fuck is that meant to achieve in the history of the world? Surely you give people a chance. It might not work, fair enough, but surely it's better to find out and at least to give the lads a chance, because I expect they work hard as anything in training. And it seems to me that they're getting absolutely jack-all back in exchange from the manager. Surely 10 or 15 minutes at the end for Hall isn't going to kill anyone. especially in a game that you might already think is well and truly gone, Will.
I think they definitely, you know, not be particularly happy with that. And although, you know, they're not going to actively come out and say that, I'm sure it would hurt a bit.
Buckley,
come on, you know, when I think everybody knows that that's doing absolutely no good for anyone. And the fact that he gets his chance over them pretty much every week, you know, as well. And he's been given his chance to prove his worth, and he just hasn't, you know, by the odd goal, which constantly infuriates everyone when he cuts his ear, you know, as if, like, he's proving us wrong. Well, it's like, well, you're not. You know, so, you know, I'm sure that hurt a little bit. It's just soul destroying, you know, and I'm not surprised by the young lads which are deterred, you know, to come and join us, or because they know that they're not going to get game time. You know, stats have proved it with the lowest team in the full, you know, English leagues. To give youngsters game time, and it's just embarrassing, really. And I know we're not in a position or have the luxury to do so and just bring them on for 20 minutes every game, you know.
I
just
totally
to give
agree.
Them a chance. We've got nothing totally. To lose at this point, so you might as well.
Well, the players that seem to be getting the chance are those that are out on loan. I mean, I'm sure we've all seen by now the Dennis Politic goal in a game for Salford City, which I think John Muscat as well had a decent showing in. Lee, just to sort of dwell on this for a moment or two. I think it's good that Wanderers are giving their youngsters a chance in the lower leagues, because it's better than not playing at all, or perhaps playing under 23 football, whatever you want to say, at Lostock or Leyland. But long term, it seems to be a bit of a tough ask for more than the odd player every now and then, like Connell, etc., to break into this team.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to actually say before that when Holding broke through, I don't think he's. The quality of Holding was sort of shown up against the dross that he was replacing, kind of thing, if you remember, when he broke through. And, you know, it was like chalk and cheese, sort of Wheater, you know, and then other defenders we had at the time, which, you know, anyway, that's just something I remember from earlier what I was going to say. But, yeah, basically, it's not easy to break through, because we have this, the old adage that you can't throw youngsters in a pressure cooker situation. And I think that's when you see if a young player's got the mettle to sort of make it in the game, throwing them in this sort of situation. I mean, they can't. The frustrating thing is we do the same thing every week, lose pretty much, apart from the odd, you know, like the miracle results like the 1-0 at Derby, 1-0 against Birmingham. And still we don't give chances to someone like Brock Bankou, who's on loan itself. I mean, I'm not there watching training. Maybe he's stagnated, maybe he's not come through, but he's been on the verge of you know, the first.
Oh, he's been around forever, hasn't he?
I remember him back at Brace at Chorley.
Yeah, he did, didn't he? Pre-season last year? Year before,
whatever.
Championship
I thought, he's one for the season. You know, he's another Rob Holden, and then that never happened.
Didn't materialise. We're not there to see these guys' progression on a daily basis. We're not there. With all the best will in the world, I'm not going watching the under-23s anymore, so I'm not seeing these guys week in, week out. So it is hard to judge and say we should be playing this guy. It's harking back to the Sami Zadi and the Jamie Thomases of you know, yesterday, that we said, look, these guys should get chances. Look at where they are now. And it's not like he's averse to not throwing anyone in. He's put Connell in there in a pressure cooker situation. So he's obviously thought Connell's got the mentality and aptitude to play in that sort of pressure cooker situation that we are always in. I mean, but any club situation is, unless you sort of settled in mid-table with nothing going on playoff-wise or relegation-wise, you know, how often are you going to be as a club in that situation where you've got nothing to play for and then you can put youngsters in? You need to put youngsters in, and, you know, we've got enough old heads and old pros to sort of help them through, because by and large, most of the players in our squad, they do seem like decent blokes. We haven't got any big-time Charlies. We haven't got any sort of divisive figures. They are good, honest pros. They're good, honest pros and good players in League One. They're not Championship players. And having these guys around, the likes of Jack Earing, who's gone off the radar a little bit. I mean, you know, he was someone who was sort of earmarked. He played in the cup, and, you know, like I say, Connor Hall and Connell, and just, like I say, Joe Muscat. We seem to be using Salford as a bit of a testing ground for our young players now. Like I say, with politics going there and scoring this, you know, more and more publicised screamer yesterday. Under what David Beckham was watching him, and, you know, scores from just over the halfway line, which is great to see that a young lad can even think about trying that. I mean, if he was if he was in the Bolton first team, you can guarantee that Parkinson would coach that out of him after a couple of games. But at the end of the day, it's hard for him to break through because it's deemed that it's not the right time for him, I think, which is nonsense, really, at the end of the day, if they've got the right mentality.
Yeah, definitely.
Perfectly fair points. And hopefully these opportunities at lower level do lead to more opportunities at a first team level, be that this season or next. I know the last time we saw such an influx of youngsters into the team was under Lennon when we were on our arse with Niall Meyer, but then it led to the Rob Holding sort of move his way out into the picture. So just goes to show it may take a few sort of missteps for one or two to come out from the pack, but whether that is going to happen or not remains to be seen.
Yeah. But just to add one more point on that as well. If you think about it as well, just very quickly, if you play a young player, obviously Connell has apparently been watched. I mean, you have scouts watching the under-23s, whatever. You know, they've got Brighton, Southampton have been watching Connell for a while. Yeah, granted. But until they see that guy try and handle a professional football game, they ain't going to start paying the big bucks for him. If we play, let's say we play... just to throw a couple of names in, we recall Muscat and he comes in at left back because we've not really got a left back who's any good, let's be honest. So say he comes in at left back and Politic starts playing. They play in the last 10 games of the season and we say we get relegated, but them two play particularly decently. Instead of getting, let's say, 100 grand for the pair of them in the summer, we could get 2 million for a pair of them because they've started playing Championship football. They're going to be worth more money. Younger players are worth more money than older players because they've got longer in the career to go. It's pretty obvious maths. Even from a financial point of view, if we go down to League One, is it not worth giving these youngsters a go? And, you know, they can't be any worse. Like our left backs, our options at left back have been horrendous all season. What type of player is this Joe Muscat? That he's been at Spurs for a long time in his youth. And can we not just give him a go and play him in a couple of games there?
It was him and Liam Edwards, because I'd seen them both in pre-season against Clitheroe. I thought both of them, you know, were...
They've obviously got something about them then as well. And the last time we had that sort of player was Tyler Garrett, perhaps, who obviously only played half a dozen games before moving on, but he moved on and we got a bit of money for him, you know? So there's nothing to say that these players... And obviously we're not, I think, in any sort of realistic sense or manner at all suggesting that we can be anything like the likes of City or Chelsea who bring things on. But there's often opportunities, I think, in the squad that perhaps we maybe miss at because we're in a position where it seems difficult, I guess, to give youth that chance. But maybe we're getting to that stage of the season now when things are looking a little bit bleaker, perhaps if we do get cut adrift, that he might take that leap.
Yeah.
He absolutely may as well, but whether he does or whether he's still here to do that remains to be seen. So anything else from the Norwich game, lads, that you feel like we've missed?
Not from that particularly, no. I think it was just all bases covered that, you know, in conclusion, we were shite.
I think it's difficult to go any deeper than that, innit?
Yeah, I mean, amazingly, we're still only 3 points from safety, and I know that obviously results went our way and, you know, we can't continue to count on that. But, you know, there is obviously still hope and potentially light at the end of the tunnel based on, you know, how we might go forward. I mean, obviously, it's Leeds next weekend. I mean, I just wondered if you could see any changes or, you know, whether we'll get battered for, you know, or if anyone's actually going to go and watch us for 39 quid ahead.
Well, yeah, that's the next comment to make. I don't suppose either of you are going to pay that, are you?
Absolutely not. I might try and sneak in as like a 12-year-old for 8 quid. I do have a baby face. But no, I don't know. We'll see. I might be over that way next weekend. But, you know, I just think even if I did, we'll just get battered. You know, I can't see it being much different. You know, I think Leeds started quite well this season and, you know, they seem to be a bit of a force to be reckoned with. And I know they've dropped off since the boss's tactics have been exposed, you know, with him going spying on you know, teams or whatever. And I know the joke's been massively overused about him coming to watch us and must have just laughed his head off. But, you know, since he's sort of been barred from doing that or stopped doing that anyway, you know, it seems to have gone down the drain for them a bit. So I can't see us, you know, being in any way imposing to them whatsoever. But, you know, there's always hope, you know, that, you know, sort of trend might continue and we might, you know, even get a point from them. But, you know, like I say, I very much doubt it.
No, me too. Lee, do you see anything different than a pacing against Leeds next week?
I think, like Will touched upon, they've slightly hit the buffers a little bit. I think a bit of nervousness has come in to their play potentially the last few weeks. So it's a case of why don't we just try and give them something to think about. I think we went there last year when they'd hit the rocks a little bit, Leeds, and I think they'd fallen out of the playoff picture. And we went there last year and didn't really give it a go and lost. I think we lost 2-1. I think we lost 2-1 at Elland Road again in the cup as well, didn't we? When Osteen scored,
yeah,
and he's
that's right. And his Hall, debut. And Hall played that night.
Hall played, he? Yeah, he did, yeah. But I can't say anything else but a defeat. But I look at every game. The only game that I haven't backed us to lose, I'm not keeping returning to betting, but the only game that I haven't backed us to lose this season is the Rotherham home game when I was away on holiday, and we did win it because I thought, you know, surely we won't get beat by these, and luckily we didn't. You know, I look at every game, I look at the team sheets, I look at the opposition's players, and I think they've got better players than us, therefore they should win. So I don't see anything else at Leeds apart from, you know, fair's fair, like we don't get trashed too often. Let's say, you know, the whole game, Sheffield United at home, Forest at home, Saturday, Norwich at home, and obviously Hull away, we've been trashed. But, you know, we don't often get beat 4 or 5. We won't play a team of Norwich's quality who are on the game to that extent every week. But I still see Leeds beating us 2 or 3 nil. 2-0 for me. I don't see where we're getting the goals from. If we score a goal, no. It's generally fairly lucky. Mm.
I was just going to touch on that after Birmingham, actually, because obviously Connolly scored and, you know, we're still without, you know, a proper striker's goal, you know, in how many games, you know. I think between them, Donaldson and McGuinness have scored, you know, 1 in 60 games or something stupid like that. And it is literally a question of where are the goals coming from, because it's literally
it's
the
brilliant.
Odd one that pops up out of nowhere. And it's like, right, well, all of a sudden, you know, we've got a win from that, but it's not the strikers that have done it. And it's them that, you know, we need the firepower from them to get these results, and it's just not going to happen, is it? So again, it comes back to Connor Hall, and you know whether it's worth giving him a shot, you know, from the off or what. But I just think something needs to change in terms of up top, anyway. But
yeah, we're sort of struggling with options, aren't we? I mean, I half expected Parkinson to come out with a kind of, well, you know, you wanted me to play 4-4-2, and look what you want me to play 2 up top, and look what happened. Yeah. Kind of comment after the game, which never came about, which is fair dues, but. There's only so much, I guess, he can do. As much as we might think that he's making wrong choices here and there with the squad that he's got, and I suppose then it comes to the only option is then to make a wider sort of punt when it comes to things like putting people like Pritchard, Hall, Connell, Osteen in, which perhaps would maybe in our situation seem like the right thing to do, given how desperate things are. But I wonder if Parky is that manager, but we'll see. I think we've all kind of agreed then that prediction for the weekend is that we're not going to get anything out of it. So you never know. I predicted just as much against Birmingham. We came away with 3 points. So stranger things have happened. Just finally, then, I mean, I know there's not a great deal to talk about in terms of the takeover. I don't think anything's concrete. I just want to just ever so briefly touch upon this Coach's Voice article that Parky put out. I mean, for me, I know I had visions of the sort of pre Nottingham Forest team talks and the tactical meetings they had being all very, you know, like Churchill, so we fight them on the beaches kind of thing, you know, stirring comments, not don't worry lads, we're all going to Benidorm tomorrow, it'll be fine sort of thing. But I mean, Will, what did you think, Will, first of all, then Lee will come to you on that.
At first when you look at it, you're like, oh bloody hell, that's inspiring. But then, you know, you take a step back and you think, well, in a way it's reassuring, you know, because you think, you know, if they go down, you know, are they going to get then targeted personally? You know, I think more than anything, you know, it's a bit of, you know, peace of mind, particularly for the families and whatever. But I think for him to say, to bring up the holiday thing, it's perhaps, you know, a little bit strange. But yeah, I mean, it's just a bit, you know, it's the last thing you expect, you know, when you think, oh, if I was a fly on the wall in the dressing room, you know, what sort of things is he saying to the team at half time or before the game or whenever it was, you know, and I think that's just the last thing that everybody would expect, to be honest. Whether or not it's right or wrong for him to say, you know, it's up to him, because at the end of the day it worked, and it's taking the pressure off.
Of course, yeah, but, and let's not, we don't want to lose sight of that. It's just perhaps maybe sort of shattered a bit of the mystique of what I expected to be a really, really sort of eye-opening, phenomenal, sort of stirring conversation.
Yeah, it sort of took me by amazement when I first read it, but I don't know how to take it, really, based on the fact that the success followed. You know, it's a bit of like, well, if it hadn't, and then that quote had come out, you know, I think the reaction would have been very different. But I think, you know, because it worked, you know, it's been played down, you know, particularly well. And I think, obviously, this article is about a week, 2 weeks old or whatever. So, you know, the fact that, you know, it's not really come to light particularly. I mean, I know it sort of did, and we were meant to touch on it last week, obviously, on the podcast. But, yeah, it's just a bit, you know, weird to have that comment out there so openly, and nobody's really brought it up other than ourselves. But, yeah.
Yeah. Lee, did you read the piece? I mean, I know it's been so widely circulated, and I'm just curious as to whether you think that there's more to it than meets the eye, or whether we're just looking for something perhaps that may not be there. It seems a bit of an interesting thing for him to do, because this, you know, other than the sort of regulatory media duties that he performs, I never really heard him speak in this manner before, and it was quite interesting. I thought a lot of it was quite impressive, I thought, too.
Yeah, I mean, reading the article before, like I said, I wasn't overly aware of it before. I had a quick read of it before we started the pod. But like I said to you guys, like, it's hard not to like the way he comes across as like a human. And I know what he means about the fact that, don't forget, the success he achieved on that last day of the season was by the absolute skin of his teeth. By, you know, it wasn't like we went out and beat Forest 4-0 because the players were so relaxed and you know, oh yeah, it doesn't matter, we'll still be alive tomorrow, we're still going to Benidorm, we're still going away on holiday, let's all just go out and play free-flowing football. We beat them with the last kick of the game, you know, and nearly the last kick of the game, and it wasn't at all easy. But yeah, fair point, we did beat them. So like you say, that's probably why the article's not, and that particular comment within Parkinson's article hasn't been picked up upon more by the support. But basically, I think it's interesting to get his point of view on the whole thing, and his point of view on how things are going at the moment. And yeah, I mean, it's good to hear how he sort of feels personally about things, because with all the best will in the world, he's not going to sort of delve into too much detail about his own personal feelings on things with Mark Isles and the Bolton Leeds. It's a professional sort of pre-match chat about the game, and it's interesting to hear his sort of take on his philosophy on maybe life as well as the game. So yeah, I say he's probably right. It isn't. If we'd gone down, we'd still be watching the team. We'd still be, sure, you know, we'd be certainly celebrating more victories. You'd like to think it might have been a good thing if we'd gone down. Yeah. You never know, do you? But you know what I mean. I don't think he's wrong to say, look, to try and relax the players. Some managers would have said, yeah, it's a must-win game, and you know, you'd go out there and show them that you deserve to wear the shirt. Blah blah blah. It just depends. We'll never know. If he'd gone that way and said that, we might have won easily, and there might not have been any worry about it. You know what I mean? You just never know, do you? Because you can never go back to that situation and see how the opposite sort of psychology would have worked. But I don't have a problem with him saying that. Like I say, I don't think he's said it because he doesn't care. He's trying to sort of almost like reverse psychology and make the players sort of relax a little bit, which...
Yeah.
I have no problem with it.
Like
really.
You say, obviously it worked, didn't it? And I suppose that's the thing we should take away from it, and perhaps learn not to read so much into it. But yeah, good on him, I suppose, for putting it out there, because it is quite a personal piece, and I enjoyed reading it. I must say there was a lot of stuff in there that was quite interesting to see, because although we might have criticisms about his tactics, he's obviously not a superficial thinker about the game. There's a lot more going on than perhaps that we know about. And again, it begs the question, just finally, to before we finish off, just about how much an influence a manager can have when it comes to the on-the-field stuff. He can prepare a team as best he wants. He can get things ready in the best manner that he thinks. But ultimately, when everyone crosses that white line, there's only 11 people responsible for the result. And I think the manager perhaps sometimes is often destined to bear the brunt of that, when perhaps it's not entirely his responsibility. But we'll see how things go over the coming weeks and see how things move on. In terms of Wanderers, there's not really any sort of talk, at least as far as I'm aware, of takeovers progressing, anything like that. But we'll see what's right. Anyway, to knock things on the head, lads, thank you very much for joining us on this podcast, number 102. I mean, we've come a long way since day one. But let's not knock this on the head and move on. Obviously, I'm no Twitter for me to mind out, apart from the obvious, Line of Vienna, STE. One thing just to mention is the fact that we're hoping, on the back of the McGinley podcast, to have maybe one or two other surprise, special, super special guests coming up in the next few weeks. Time will tell whether we get them or not, but we've certainly put feelers out there for people of very different eras of Wanderers history which will hopefully provide excellent content for y'all to listen to. But we'll let y'all know, I guess, Will, on the various social media channels. Will, would you like to just leave us with your details for those Definitely. That wish to say hello to you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at WIWENLJ, and obviously you can find my articles on the website.
Brilliantly.
Yes, at Trotatenzo, T-E-N-Z-O at the end.
Fantastic, and thank you again for joining us back on the podcast, Lee. It's been far too long. We won't leave it as long next time, I promise.
Yeah, great stuff. Yeah, like I say, founding member, I think I was on that. So it's,
indeed, mate. Yeah, indeed. We've come a long way in that time, but that's Cheers, brilliant. Man. And I'll let Will do the closer, because I'm not saying that. So Will,
to you. No, it's fine. Yeah, thank you very much for listening. C'est la vie.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.